Have your Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 2 once again, and picking up where we left off in our last session. I think what I'm going to do, even though I could drag it out and say a whole lot more about these issues of sonship commitment to our education, where Proverbs 2, 1 through 5 forms that first kind of post-doctrinal exhortation a son receives after sonship orientation takes place, and he's honestly attending, he's going to participate by interactive learning and make it the top priority of his life. Those are pretty so well familiar with us, I think, that we can dispense with that. And even though we're familiar with the next body of information in the exhortation of Proverbs 2, it's that one that I think is going to be the funnest for you to be able to look back with what we have studied and what you have gone through in Romans 8:16 through 11. Through chapter 11, but especially Romans 8:16 through 39, that you're going to be able to look at this and see this in a way that you couldn't have seen it when I first talked about it. That's one of the reasons why when we first went over it, I spent more time on this one and I spent more time on the first grouping, the first five verses, and less time on verses 6 through 9. But now I want to go back to 6 through 9 because it really is the exhortation that I'm after. And even though we've gone over it, it's actually the second grouping, or the commitment to sonship education, that really has to do with the effectual working of what you learn. And just kind of ignore all of this down here. We did that the first time, but for tonight I didn't get the chart updated the way I wanted it. I'm not really all that concerned about any of this down here. And really, I'm only concerned with 6 through 9 right now. But I'll let that stand just so there's something for you to see back there. But I know we've been through this, actually, this second grouping before, or the exhortation to the son's commitment to the effectual working of what he learns. And we've talked about the nature of the curriculum, how it's perfectly suited to do its job, the trustworthiness of the one who wrote it is complete. You can depend completely upon it to do its job, and the value of its effectual working is more valuable than anything else. That's something we covered before. We're going to cover this a little bit differently now. And what I'm primarily after isn't the entirety of this exhortation as much as I am verses 6, 7, 8, and 9. And let's just once again read through that, where we don't have ifs coming up, but we do have a for, and we do have a conclusion or a then that comes up in verse 9. He says, "For the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path." As you can easily tell at the end there, verse 9, in the then, those are talking about the sonship decision-making skills, which you're just getting ready now to learn. And what you're going to have is this beautiful dovetailing of a post-doctrinal exhortation that hearkens you back to your sonship establishment to generate once again that godly enthusiasm and ambition and desire to cry Abba Father all the more. And at the same time, it's going to be with the view to what verse 9 says, gaining now those decision-making skills, which is the first body of instruction of my sonship life and completes my first level of sonship education. So, contained in verses 6, 7, 8, and 9 is something that we need to take some time on. And there's going to be, I want to look at some things in more detail now, but what I'm really after is where you can demonstrate, and when I say demonstrate to yourself, I'm not so concerned with whether or not you're going to be able to answer questions properly. But what my concern is that you can sit there, and even in what I say, you'll be able to come along and you'll say, "That's absolute. I could almost amen each one of those. I can say yes to every one of those. And it's so clear, it's so apparent, it's right there, it connects with something that I've been taught. That's what I'm after. Where you not so much demonstrate to me verbally, but that you really do sit there and go, yeah, I see that. Because it's so clear because of what you now know and what you've been privy to over your sonship establishment. So our first task is to kind of be able to see some structure to what's going on in these four verses. But we're going to wind up demonstrating to ourselves if that commitment level is where it should be in order to present your body a living sacrifice in Romans 12, 1 and 2. And here you should be able to put some things together, like I say, that you probably couldn't have done prior to our going through Romans 8, 16 through 39 especially. And you should now be able to gain the benefits of this post-doctrinal exhortation far better than we ever did when we first looked at it, just simply as when we were identifying the exhortations and the bodies of doctrine, da-da-da-da-da, in the format. So what I want to do is really focus our attention upon these four verses, verse 6, 7, 8, and 9, and see if you can match some things up far better and have an appreciation for your sonship establishment far better than you ever have before. And with this post-doctrinal exhortation, as I say, bring back and flood back into your mind, into your heart, the godly optimism and the godly enthusiasm for going on and beginning your sonship education proper in Romans 12, 3. Well, let's take a look at this. Once again, verse 6, and this is where my new charts would have come in, just so that you know. But I don't have them, so that's okay. But we've got our Bibles, and we can take the remainder of our time to just take a look at some things and talk honestly about them. When you read what's said here, what I'm after is perceiving, as I say, some structure to what these four verses are telling you. Because my understanding is there is structure to it. And in fact, there's almost jaw-dropping matching up of things that take place here. So as we would always do, let's see if we can just gain some appreciation for, without even thinking about what matches to what, about components to this thing. So when you hear him say, "For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints." Let's stop right there. I mean, it's easy to say you've got verse 6, verse 7, verse 8, which is one major component, and then the result in verse 9. Okay, that's easy. Let's take it beyond that. Let's just concentrate for the moment on verses 6, 7, and 8 for right now. What do you see component-wise in that? Or maybe do you see steps to it or anything like that? Layer upon layer. That's good. Because there is layer upon layer. Yeah, that's another great thing. He's doing all this. He's giving the wisdom. It's out of his mouth that comes knowledge, and he's laying up, and he's the buckler, and he's keeping paths, and he's preserving the way of the saint. He's doing all of that. That's very important to all of this as well. And I know it may not be clicking just yet, but that's exactly how you've been taught. When it comes to the nature of the curriculum, its trustworthiness, the value of it, and all those kinds of things, to commit yourself to its effectual learning, it's the information contained in Romans, especially 8, 16 through 39, that you learn about what your Father has done. Not only in adopting you, but now you're learning what he's done in all his preparation work for you to succeed with him as his son and daughter. So that's important. Anyone else? Let's see if I can approach this backwards. Maybe this will help. Go down to verse 8. There are certain words that your eye starts to clue in on, and they are action words, these verbal expressions of what he is going to do or what he's done. And let's see if those uncover for us a little more breakdown to what's or components to what's being set forth, at least in these three verses. What is the final phrase that he's going to do? What? Yeah, he preserveth the way of his saints. By the way, there's a difference between paths, plural, and a singular way. And we'll talk about that. But for now, right, okay, so after the comma in verse 8, you've got, and preserveth the way of his saints. So you've got one component there. What's the one that precedes that? He keeps the paths of judgment. Is that the same thing as preserveth the way of his saints? Not exactly. So you can almost say, well, there's another component. So there's two that are pretty easy identifiable. He's going, and by the way, again, the terminology, as I said in our, I think it was our question and answer session, this is sonship terminology, that he keeps the way, he preserves the way, he keeps the paths. So it's not like he's not doing anything. He is. But these are inner man issues. But he's keeping, almost like guarding the paths of judgment. He's preserving the way of his saints. Those are two components.
He's not doing all. He's waiting for us also to do something. So every time we do something, we preserve the way.
Right.
But we are also growing up.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not.
It's a two-way street.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even at that, we'll talk about the way in which he does that. In fact, that's going to become a very important issue as we go on through our sonship education, because we're going to start learning insight into how the adversary has constructed things that will work against that. Because see what immediately follows after verse 9 in this exhortation? You have that evil man and strange woman coming up in just a couple of verses. Okay, so there's going to be a challenge to that. There's going to be some opposition to that. But for now, we're just concerned with identifying some components. So we've got at least two. All right, that takes care of verse 8. Verse 7, what do you see there? The next one, going backwards, he is a buckler to them that walketh uprightly. Okay. Nobody has a Bible that says he's a shield, do they? Okay. Everybody looks at Brian. No, it shouldn't say shield. He is a buckler. A buckler is a kind of a shield, but it's not a shield like the shield of faith that you can completely get down behind. This is an attachment to the arm, and we'll talk about more in detail. I think I've mentioned it before, but never making the connections like we're going to make with that. Okay, so you've got three. You've got going backwards, he preserveth the way of the saints. That's the last one. The one before that, he keepeth the paths of judgment. And the one before that, he is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. That's three. What's the next one? He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. So that's four. And that just leaves us with one verse, verse 6. Now, this is the one that gets tricky. That's why I went backwards, because those four are easy to identify. The one in verse 6, now I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to argue with me about this, that's fine. I'm going to relinquish the argument. But my understanding, and I think you'll see it this way too, My understanding is that you're going to look at verse 6, and if you're just looking at grammar, grammatical markings, and looking for components, you're going to see two, right? Because you're tempted to say, well, one of them is out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. And then there's another one, for the Lord giveth wisdom. And you've got a colon there. My understanding is that verse 6 is actually said in such a way that while you have two thoughts separated by a colon, the link between those two are far closer together than in most uses of the colon. Grammatical uses are not ironclad. There's common usage and there's rather uncommon or less common usage. And I'm not trying to split hairs. Well, I guess I am trying to split hairs here. What I'm relying on in verse 6, more than the grammatical markings, is the contextual flow of what's stated. And the context, to me, tells me that those two thoughts, while there are two thoughts in one sentence, they form one component. Out of his mouth cometh wisdom. And you'll notice in verse 6, after the colon, verse 6, for the Lord giveth wisdom. The second thought to that really is the mechanical means by which it's going to take place. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. More than that, evidence-wise, for me anyway, that kind of nails this down, is that when you look at those verbal words I told you about, those verbal action words, the King James translators were honest enough to tell you that the word cometh in verse 6 was not in the Hebrew text that they were translating from. They added the word cometh. And that's, you know that because it's in italics, right? Okay. If you were to take that and set that word aside for a moment, how many verbal action words do you have? Well, in that verse, one. But I mean in all three verses, you have five. You have the issue of the Lord giveth, he layeth, he is a buckler, he keepeth, and preserveth. Now, like I said, you may be able to pin me against the wall and say, I demand that there's two issues there in verse 6. But I think if you're honest and really think about what's being said there and the way it's being said, even though there's two thoughts to it or two sides to it, it is a same coin. It is a single issue. At least that's my understanding of it at this point. And there's more that comes into play here because of some other things that I haven't said, but for right now, that's the way I'm going to look at it. That verse 6 is one component. The Lord giveth wisdom out of his mouth. You could almost say that that first issue of verse 6 almost acts as a title for all the rest of them that's going to occur afterwards. Because all of them have to do with his wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. That's one issue. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. That's two issues. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. That's three. He keepeth the paths of judgment. That's four. And preserveth the way of his saints. That's five. Once that's properly understood and appreciated, then you're ready. Thou shalt understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. You have five components to that commitment to the effectual working, that exhortation that surrounds the commitment to the effectual working of what you learn, why do you think there's five? Yeah. What? Where's the only place you've run on to five specific things that you were given in sonship establishment? Yeah, Steve's right. Cecil's right. Those things that you are being exhorted to here all match up with each one of those five probing questions. You may not, right now where you sit, see that, but between now and the time we come back, see what you can see. Because if you pay attention to what's said here, you're going to realize as you go through verse 6 and then through verse 7, it's one thing to talk about God giving wisdom out of his mouth coming knowledge and understanding. It's another and to talk about laying up sound wisdom for the righteous. Okay. But when he brings up the issue of he's a buckler to them that walk uprightly, you're now talking about something different. What's the big difference there? A buckler, No. What is a buckler?
It's a small shield used for fighting, an offensive shield.
It's a small shield.
That's written, obviously something you said.
Okay.
That the shield is indispensable and profitable to us.
Yeah. But let's start out with the most obvious thing of all. It's a protection in a time of war. What you move into in the third issue in this list is an enemy. I think back to Romans 5 or Romans 8. If God be for us, who can be against us? No one can. What was the second of the probing questions? Huh? If flip over there and look at it. Nope, that's the third one. What's the second one? Freely give us all things. The first one, if God be for us, who can be against us? The second one, he that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not also with him also freely give us all things? But it's not until you get to the third probing question. Actually, the first two probing questions are, how do I want to put it? There are more impediments than they are opposition. It's when you get to the who questions that you get opposition. And the very first opposition you're going to get, and the biggest opposition you're going to get, is from who?
Yourself.
Yourself. So guess where this piece of armament is found? It's found strapped to your body. That's what a buckler was strapped. In fact, that's where we get the word buckle to this day. A buckler was actually it was put on the arm, cinched up tight. The leather was wetted so that as it dried, it even stuck tighter to you, that you couldn't get shed of it. And when you realize that you are your own worst enemy, you're going to need a buckler. Because that enemy, you're going to be in the closest contact with for the longest period of time. Now, we're going to bring out a lot of nuances about that buckler issue, but that's the first time you get opposition. The next opposition you get is going to be from yourself again, and he is going to keep the paths of judgment. And we will see how that he has to keep paths of judgment because there is something within you that you're going to come up against as an enemy that's going to try to get you off the path of judgment. And we'll talk about that more in detail. But then that third who enemy is one who is going to try to take you out of the game altogether. And that's why he's going to have to preserve the way of his saints. Because there is an overall way. There are paths that you can choose and paths that you may choose that you will fail, that you have failed to choose properly on. But even though you've chosen an improper path to follow, it doesn't mean that you're out of the way altogether. There's recovery for that, and there's provision for that, and you should recognize that by now. When we talked about that fourth, who is he that condemneth? We talked about the fact that you are going to have opportunities, I called them at the time sonship graces, where you're going to have opportunities to participate, to go down a particular path, to put the doctrine that you've learned into practice in a particular path. And sometimes you will say, nah, I don't want to do that. And maybe you'll shut off another one over here and another one over here, and you can come to the point where you can become condemned in your own thinking and think that you're a wretch and that you want to just give up and quit. And who is it that's going to come along and make intercession for you? Jesus Christ is going to make intercession for you, and he is going to actually intercede to the Father in your behest. And he is going to come to the Father, and he is going to be able to express empathy with what you're going through, and be able to make it so that the Father never even thinks about disowning you or disinheriting you or disadopting you or any of those kinds of things. There's an enormous power in that great probing question. And he instead he's going to keep the paths of judgment. But then there's this one who is going to come along, if you have the opportunity to do it, who has produced a system and a policy of evil that is designed to make it so that you are separated from the love of Christ, and so that you just give up on the whole way of the thing, and you've turned your back on the way. And all that information that Paul takes you through of how of the godly remedy for who shall separate us from the love of Christ, so that you have that full persuasion in mind and you know that you're more than a conqueror, that's God preserving the way. These things match up beautifully. Not only do they match up beautifully, but they enhance the doctrine. That's one of the things that post-doctrinal exhortations should do. They should take what you already know and enhance it. Make it even more vibrant and more alive and more, not real, but more, I don't know what. More je ne sais quoi. But what I want you to do is like I say, just kind of take that information and think about it between now and Sunday morning. And we're going to return to this section and spend a sufficient enough time on each one of the components so that you can begin to demonstrate to yourself the great matchup that there is between God giving wisdom and out of his mouth coming knowledge and understanding. And how that really is a post-doctrinal exhortation to you when God says, who can be against you? Nobody can. If I'm for you, what do you think I'm giving you? Out of my mouth is the wisdom and the knowledge and the highest of all that you need as a son understanding. And I've constructed this curriculum so that when it comes to you succeeding in your sonship life, the wisdom, the knowledge, and the understanding, I've all built into it. Who can stand against, who could come against that? No one can. And then begin thinking about that issue of him sparing not his own son, but if he delivered him up for us all, how shall he not also freely give us all things? By the way, that's the reason why you've got the terminology like it says there. He gave him up for us all. What's he been doing? He's laying up sound doctrine, not just sound wisdom, not just any wisdom, but sound wisdom. And when we talked about that issue in that second probing question, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Well, he will. When we come up to a situation where we're either going to need the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding of our Father, or the opportunity to use it, or the information to be able to successfully combat an enemy attack or opposition, it'll all be there. It's built into the curriculum. He layeth up sound wisdom. He's laid it up. Where'd he lay it up? It's not up in heaven somewhere, like we have to go and get it. It's not down in the bowels of the earth somewhere, like we have to go down there and bring it back up. It's nigh you. It's right there. It's in the curriculum. And who is he that... who shall lay a charge? You're going to have to face yourself as your own worst enemy. But he's provided a buckler to be a buckler. And that is the key to know what a buckler is and why that's such an excellently, perfectly chosen word to describe as the provision to them that walk uprightly. And that's exactly what you're doing as a son. Where did that terminology come from? Think Romans. No, don't go back that far. Well, yeah, but when it first started becoming real important to you, you could say Romans 6. I know why you're saying that. Yeah, that's appropriate. But I guess, yeah, that's right. You're thinking that. I'm thinking Romans 8. We're walking upright. We're walking after the Spirit and not after the flesh. And the way we're going to begin perambulating and walking is as a son. And so all of that is. This is why I say you could take this and start wringing out of it so much that not only parallels, but connects directly to what's being said here. He's a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment. I talked about that just a little bit, but again, who is he that condemneth? You're going to be choosing these paths, opting for these to participate in these sonship graces. And when you foolishly decide against that, you're not out of the game. You're not. It hasn't ruined you. It may have involved just a colossal waste of time, but you're not out of the thing. As long as you're still crying out, the curriculum factored that. It has that in it. There's recovery at any point. And he keeps the paths of judgment. But when that adversary and his policy of evil starts to oppose you, he is trying to get you to throw in the towel and quit on the whole thing. It's not an issue any longer of I messed up in the game. It's the issue of I don't even want to be in this anymore. I don't want to, let alone paths. I don't want anything to do with paths. I don't want anything to do with this way. That's separating you from the love of Christ. And he says he'll preserve that, and you know now how he preserved it. You know from Romans 8, 29 and 30, the chains of provision that he made. And you know that the godly remedy to who shall separate us from the love of Christ shall, and he goes through the nine, shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword. and you know the godly remedy, and we're counted as sheep for the slaughter, and all these things. We're more than conquerors through Christ, and I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, principalities, powers, present, and so forth and so on, none of those things can separate. That whole, the reason that that was so lengthy and so involved and so emotionally wrought was because of the devastating nature that it can be to you. And it's just said in one little phrase here, though. All that he's done to preserve the way of your sonship life is what you came to appreciate in Romans 8 in those five probing questions, especially that fifth one. So, right now, I just, again, getting it out on the table. On Sunday, we'll take these up in order. And we'll look at them. It's going to take a couple of Bible classes. This isn't going to be, we're not going to be till June. But in just a couple of Bible classes, we'll get through this. And that's the last thing we're going to do before we hit Romans 12, 1 and 2. But that forms the proper post-doctrinal exhortation that should bring once again back into your heart that proper response, not of some loony, emotionally wrought person at a concert, but of a soberly thinking son who, even in sober thinking, has the sentiment of his father, the enthusiasm and the desire that he had not only when he first was told about operating with his father in his business, but is even greater than that because he can now with intelligence look back and say, I've accomplished this. This has been done in me, and I can really put some things together here, and I can say with the exhortation, he really does do all of that. That's what he's telling me he has done. Why in the world? That makes it so that the only reasonable thing for you to do is to present your body to him. Present yourself. Say, I'll do this. That's your reasonable service. It's the only reasonable thing to do in light of the mercies of God that have been put into all of this. Well, I'm not trying to say that you see all this clearly right now. I'm trying to get you to start looking at some things a little more closely, and then on Sunday we'll start looking in more detail at them, and hopefully they'll pop, because that's what they do to me. They just pop. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what he was saying. That's why he uses the word buckler. That's why he talks about paths plural. That's why he talks about a way singular. Now I know, in light of Romans 8, 16 through 39, I can look back on that now and appreciate it far more than I ever could before. And that's what my desire is, because that's the only godly and biblical way that we should approach Romans 12. So we'll stop right there and we'll pick it up next time back here looking at this second component or second major component, the commitment to the effectual working of what you learn. We'll start there on Sunday morning with our heads bowed. Father, again, we are so grateful to have a book that is so perfectly and magnificently put together as this one is. To make the matches and connections is just uncanny and fantastic, because it so enlightens us to the power of your word, and these words really are living words that can live powerfully in us. We thank you for this opportunity to be educated by your word and your grace tonight. We pray once again for your wisdom in the matters we have discussed, and that between ourselves and you, we take the time to verify these things, to see these things connect, and have the pleasure of the godly contentment that comes by means of looking back over a section of a form of doctrine and having completed it properly and enabled then by this exhortation to move on to the next. We thank you once again for your perfect word and pray for its power working within us effectually, for we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.